Hello and welcome to Object Matters, the podcast of the Chow Chak Wing Museum at the University of Sydney. My name's Craig Barker and I'm the head of public engagement for the museum. And Object Matters is a podcast in which our guest talks about objects or items within the museum collection and their relationship with them. Very excited for this episode to be joined by the 2023 Makuho Maclay Fellow. Big warm welcome to Professor Angel Villoria Petit. Angel, thank you for joining us. You are a zoologist, and I'm really looking forward to our conversation. Welcome to Object Matters.
Yeah, thank you for the invitation. Yeah. Really, it's been very pleasant to be here in Sydney and be a participant of activities in the museum, discovering exciting things in their collections, very old collections. I'm very happy to be here also for... to give information about my job, my work here.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you with us. Let's unpack your background and then what you've been doing while you've been in Sydney as part of the fellowship.
Well,
could I begin by asking you to talk about your background and your research interests?
Yeah, I am basically a biologist. Mm-hmm. I studied biology as a first degree in the University of Zulia in Maracaibo, my birth city.
Yes.
In western Venezuela. Then I did I worked a little bit at the university where I studied for a few years, and then I got an opportunity was a sponsor to study in England.
Yeah.
In the 1990s, I got a PhD degree in zoology at the King's College London. And it was in a joint program with the Natural History Museum.
Oh, okay.
The former British Museum of Natural History. So, and in Venezuela, I used to do work for a museum, natural history museum, in the university. So my life is more or less linked to museums. In my experience in general.
So throughout your career, you've had that ability to work both within an academic setting, but also then with museum collections?
Yeah, I used to teach zoology and invertebrate zoology and entomology, which is a science for studying the insects, in my university for 10 years.
Yes.
Then after I returned from my doctoral degree, I stayed there for one more year, and then I changed to the Venezuelan Institute for Scientific Research, and I have been there working at the Center of Ecology. Yes. I'm not an ecologist, but I work for the Center of Ecology for the last 23 years, more or less.
Yeah.
And basically, I study animals. I prefer to study butterflies since I was very young. I was specializing in butterflies, and I am a systematist, which is classifying animals. I do systematic revisions. I study the geographical distribution of butterflies. So in that sense, I am also consider myself a biogeographer.
Yes, right.
Which is the study of the patterns of distribution of species and in general, basically in my country, but also in other countries of America, especially South America and the Andean countries.
Yes, right.
Yeah,
right.
That was basically my main interest. But I have been a little bit opportunistic. I mean, you grow up in the tropics and in tropical America, and then everywhere you go, you find interesting new animals, new things. So it's very easy for a biologist to have a good career.
Because nature
is so rich and so diverse.
Yeah. And within the Venezuelan university system, that are there many students coming through who have interest, or is it still?
Yeah, biology is offered by Faculty of Sciences in general. Mm. We have Faculty of Sciences in several cities, the main cities, Maracaibo, Caracas, the capital. Also in Cumaná, in the eastern part of Venezuela, and Carabobo, which is in Valencia, also in the central part. I mean, there are students of biology everywhere in the country, but the people have different options to select. Some prefer studying microbiology, other goes to botany, or they go to biotechnology or molecular biology. So very different kind of fields within the discipline.
Yeah.
I used to teach as well in the institute because we have graduate students at the Venezuelan Institute for Scientific Research.
Yes.
And I used to teach some courses there. Biogeography was one.
Yeah.
I say I used to because it has been about 3 years that I haven't restarted the courses. We have very few students at the moment. After COVID, was very much affected by that. And I offer these courses, and I also teach a little bit of entomology. And I have been taking some, classes in a different university, like a casual work. I mean, just for very short courses in forensic entomology, which is the study of insects for police investigations.
Yes, so in terms of understanding what's happening in a crime
scene. Yeah, especially for the calculation of what is called the interval postmortem or the postmortem interval. With the use of flies, basically, or certain beetles that, feed on corpses, basically.
Yeah.
And they have a life cycle that is, give a guide for the time elapsed between the death and the discovery of a crime scene, they call it.
Yeah, fascinating. Yeah. I bet you didn't expect that would be where you would end up when you were a student.
No, I was more interested basically in marine biology when I was very young. But then I went to the mountains for the first time and got hooked by the presence of butterflies flying very high in the mountains at 4,000 meters in the Venezuelan Andes. And I thought, well, the butterflies, those ones were not very beautiful. They were mainly brown. So I tried to identify them, and I found it very difficult because they were not in the books available to me in that time. And then I said, well, if they are difficult, that could be a good challenge for my career. So I started investigating this one.
And that was the pathway.
Yeah. That was basically, and I'm a specialist in these brown butterflies. They belong to the family Nymphalidae, and the subfamily is called Satyrinae. And that was this interest that brought me to Sydney.
Yeah. Well, I want to come to that now, actually, because you, of course, are in Sydney as the 2023 Mackay Fellowship. Mm-hmm. This is normally awarded annually. It's been a number of years because of COVID, and I believe you were actually meant to have been here a few years ago. But why were you interested in taking up this fellowship and coming out to Sydney?
Yeah, well, first I established contact in 2014 with Robert Blackburn, who was the man in charge of curating the collection of insects here. I sent him mails asking for to see whether he could search for me in the collections for certain possible type specimens, which are the specimens that were used long time ago to describe some species of brown butterflies. That was my first interest. Three species of brown butterflies from America, tropical America, that were described by Drew Drury, who was an entomologist and a collector. He was also a very rich person, a goldsmith in London in the late 18th century.
Well, I'm going to ask you some more questions about Drury and his collection in a moment. Yeah. But so initially, while you were doing research...
I asked him to send me information about this. He produced some photograph. I mean, not very professional. He said, can I take just photograph just to show you what we have? Mm. So I got the photograph. I saw there were very, very old ones and possible types. So I said there must be something to search for in that time, the Mackay Museum. So later on, the year 2020, beginning the pandemic, I was taking my sabbatical year in the University of Cambridge, and I wrote to Jude Philp asking for the fellowship. And then she said, do you have a proposal? Yes, I have. And sent a written proposal to investigate basically the American butterflies, including the brown ones, possibly found in the Mackay collections in the Chao Chak Wing Museum. I mean, there could have been the types of those ones, because we know historically the Mackay collection was built up by, hoarding, I would say, that's the word, other people's collection.
Yes.
And it was taken to Australia very early on in 1826, and it was detached from the main center of the study of butterflies
Yes.
That was in that time in Europe and basically London.
Yep.
London and some places in Sweden, the taxonomies, and Germany. So people forgot about this collection,
yes.
Basically.
Yeah.
And then I won the fellowship, and I couldn't come because of COVID.
Border shut and go.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
yes.
I had to wait for the 3 more years until the time, I mean, was okay for me to take the permit,
yeah.
Working permit there to come here.
Yeah. Well, it looks like it's been worth the wait because
yeah.
In your time in Australia, I know you're heading back to Venezuela in a couple of days' time, but how long have you been here?
Yeah, three months. Yeah.
3 months. So in that 3 months, you've achieved a lot.
Yeah, that was a very intensive work since the very first day. But we developed a protocol of working that was, the main reason why I could get such a result, because it is impossible to go through all the cabinets and drawers at once.
Yeah.
So we did the work. I did the work first on working on very high quality photograph.
Right.
Of the drawers.
Of the drawers.
With the collection. So, but this gives you just part of the information, very partial information. It's not correct.
Yeah.
Sometimes the decisions, you have to look at the specimens.
Yeah.
So after a few weeks working with the pictures, I realized they were more than what I expected.
Yes.
I mean, they were not only the Drury's types, which were about 80% of them are still here.
Ah, yes.
But the other thing was I discovered that the Maclay collection contained the collections of other famous entomologists in England in that time.
Mm.
So I started to research a little bit on the history of the acquisition of the and the provenance of the collections.
Yeah.
So now we have figured out what happened.
Yeah.
He basically bought, he didn't bother about paying people to collect butterflies individually.
Yeah.
Like others did.
So this is Alexander Maclay.
Yeah, Alexander Maclay, the first, the oldest.
The patriarch of the Maclay family, yes.
Yeah, exactly. He was the one.
He was purchasing other collections rather than collecting himself.
Yeah,
so
exactly. That is my impression.
Yeah.
Maybe he collected a little bit, but he was already in his 60s, I think, when he came here.
Yeah.
So he was a wine merchant. And he probably was very wealthy because of that, but he was also a public servant.
Yes.
And he was a secretary,
yes.
Colonial secretary for
yes.
the New South Wales, something
yes.
like that.
And interestingly, historically, that was a role that was given to within the British Empire to a young man on the rise. So for Alexander Maclay to take up that position, as you say, in the 60s, quite late in his life, was perhaps indicative of obviously a desire to come to Australia, but probably also a financial necessity because he was spending so much money collecting.
Yeah, I think he went bankrupt.
Yeah.
But just basically because he was paying too much for his collection.
Collections.
He was, I know people like that these days.
Yes.
Yeah, because they are so fanatic.
Yes, yeah, obsessed.
Obsessed, yeah, that's the word, yeah.
So let's break it down. Here in Sydney, with the Maclay Collections of Natural History, and you've been focusing specifically on butterflies and moths, approximately how many these specimens are there?
I saw that, but I can't tell you about the butterfly. I didn't have much time to look at the moths, but the butterfly collection must be several thousands.
Right.
Yeah, I may say they were between 6 or 7 to 9,000 butterflies.
Right, so a very large collection.
Yeah, this is my impression, but I don't have a count, really.
Yeah, yeah.
But we selected in this group of butterflies, we found many types, and I mean, I'm not talking about, I was expecting to find around 30 types. We call them primary type specimens.
So could you explain what a primary type specimen is?
A primary type is just when someone is going to describe a new animal, a new plant, they have to examine a sample of this or part of this animal or a complete animal. But it is sad to say that we biologists who are supposed to study the living phenomenon, or the phenomenon of life. We kill everything and just stop the process of life.
Yes.
To be able to study the organism.
Yes.
I mean the physical machine, and that's what the naturalists started doing in after the Renaissance.
Yes.
And during the times of Linnaeus, who was the father of the classification of biological organisms.
Yes.
And it was about the time of Drury and all the people who came to London, like Johann Christian Fabricius, who has been considered for a long time the father of modern entomology.
Yes.
And here in the collection, in the Maclay collection, there are specimens studied by Fabricius.
Ah, right.
So he basically used this specimen, produced the descriptions. Drury wrote the descriptions in English.
Yes.
Fabricius wrote the descriptions in Latin.
Yes.
But Drury was the first one in this group who illustrated the butterflies.
So there's an image to go with the description.
Because Fabricius was a follower of his mentor, who was Carl von Linnaeus, who said that a good description doesn't need an illustration. So he didn't have the time nor the money for the illustrations, color illustrations, but Drury has the money.
Yes.
So he contracted Moses Harris, who was a very well-known entomologist and very fine painter and an engraver as well.
Yeah.
And he produced the copper plates, I mean the original paintings and the copper plates for the book by Drury that is called Illustrations of Natural History. That's a short title. It's a very long title in those times. And then he painted the butterflies, and the butterflies are very well illustrated, and it is possible to compare the animals and the plate and to find which animal was used for each illustration.
So you can match. Yeah.
So that's what I did.
Yep.
And I found a number of them.
Yes.
But there was also at halfway of my work, I started to see that there were also many species described by Fabricius, which I know because I have read the descriptions.
Yes.
And I know that there is a collection of contemporary watercolors that are kept in the University of Oxford in England. And these ones were painted by another wine merchant who was also a collector called William Jones.
Yeah.
And he was known by the name of William Jones of Chelsea. He was in Chelsea, which is part of London, very kind of a trendy area.
It's
of
very
London.
Rich now. But,
yeah.
Yeah.
And he painted, I don't know, 600 plates, and they got published two years ago.
Right.
The person who curated this collection for the publication in a book used to be my supervisor in London when I did my PhD. So we got in touch. We know more or less this. I had those images in electronic format since 2014 because the University of Oxford made them available at a lower resolution.
Right.
And I have that one. So I started using my files here to compare.
Yeah.
And I discovered they were also here.
So there were matches. Okay, yeah, that's okay. Extraordinary.
So, yeah, that was the beginning of the adventure.
Yeah.
Because I started to look for only 39 or 40 specimens, and I ended up finding 284.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
So, well, I'll ask more about the process, but I'm assuming then you're going to be publishing each of those 284.
Yeah, well, this is a first step. We are ready. I say we because I had assistants here. I mean, there was Matthew Juan, who has been already interviewed in your
space. In the podcast series,
He was helping me in the process of identifying physically the specimens, labeling, cataloging them. We had to, make sure that they were separated to different cabinets, which are a cabinet to contain the types only.
Yes.
They are going to be photographed for the documentation.
Yeah.
We produce new labels for them
with
the identity and establishing that they are types.
Yeah. Were they labeled by Maclay?
Some of them have labels, but in that time, labels were not usual.
Right.
Labels were set aside the specimen, with the specimen.
Not with them.
The specimen is in a pin.
Yeah.
They call it entomological pins. And the pins are very easy to recognize in this case. The Drury's and Jones, Pins, and all these communities are more or less the same because they probably got them from a single source.
Yes,
in London, but they are very large, very long, quite big. Very easy, very particular. They are very particular, very easy to distinguish them from the modern ones.
Yes, right.
So that's another.
So you were able to identify the original pinnings then.
When we had doubts, we checked the pin, say this is not a pin from the time, so we discard this sample.
Yep.
Because there is a mixture of samples that are a little bit more modern.
Yes, right.
And for instance, there is a big collection of insects, including butterflies from Cuba, that was brought probably by Alexander Maclay's son, who was William Sharp Maclay, who used to live in Cuba.
Mm.
And I wonder whether the Cubans know that there is such a large collection of Cuban insects here in
Sydney. Let's just go back a little bit. So you've got Alexander Maclay, William Sharp's father, who's purchasing from these other entomologists.
Yeah, we also trace that. Because believe it or not, there are very good resources now on the internet, and including something called the Biodiversity Heritage Library, which is a digital source of books, all books in natural history.
Mm.
So we searched there and we found the catalogs of the auctions of the collections.
Yes.
And there are two copies available of the auction of Drury's collection in London in 1805. And the two catalogs are annotated. And one of these catalogs, the one in the Library of the Natural History Museum in London, it has the annotation of the names of the person who purchased each lot.
Oh, fantastic.
So some of them say Maclay.
Yes.
And there is some description of the butterflies in the lots.
Right.
Not all of them are mentioned, but the fact that the butterflies were identified means that...
And the purchaser.
Exactly. So, but... Later on, there were other auctions, including the collections of people who have purchased material from Drury, and Maclay was a bidder. And also.
Yes.
But that one was found here.
Yes.
Because in the Maclay Library, there are a couple of books, bound volumes of pamphlets.
Right.
And within these pamphlets, there are catalogs of all these auctions, annotated by Maclay and signed by Maclay.
Yes.
So we can even know now how much he paid because he annotated the price for each lot he got. So this is going to be a major complex research. It probably has to be separated into parts because the historical part is one, the taxonomical part of butterflies is another one. So, and it's very good to build up an argument, kind of a justification, because I know some other specialists in butterflies elsewhere, they are going to complain about how I selected these butterflies without labels.
Yes.
Some of them have no labels.
Yes.
But it is unmistakable when you see the butterfly, the setting of the butterfly,
and the
illustration.
Mm.
They have the same angle in the wings. Yeah. They have the same small dot on the doesn't appear in other specimens. So it's not a photograph, but in many cases, they are almost like photographs. There are other cases with the small animals that are not that good, but they are good in general.
As part of the process of re-identifying these specimens, are you photographing them?
Yeah, well, not me. It's the photographer of the museum.
For the museum, yes.
Yeah, the photographer, who is a magnificent professional, very good one, he started testing the equipment and he produced a series of maybe the photograph of 20 species.
Yes.
As a test, and they are very good quality. They need to be photographed because if we are going to publish what we call the typification of the specimens, they need to be illustrated, and the labels have also to be shown.
Yep.
So we have the original labels of the specimens that have labels, and we also have the new label which indicating that that is a type with the name, original name of a species. The indication that is we call it lectotype, which means that it's a type designated later, and it's got the sex. When it is possible to determine the sex,
yes,
I gave a short lecture about that in my recent talk at the museum, because identifying the sex can be difficult.
Mm, I don't doubt.
And some specimens have lost their abdomen.
Well, I was going to ask about this.
That's not, in that case, we have to use other sources of information like the sexual dimorphism or development of secondary sexual organs in the wings, and or the legs are very short in males in certain families. But sometimes it is not possible to say that it was a male or a female, so we leave that blank space. Yeah. But in general, most of them were identified that way.
I mean, I was going to ask, even within museum collecting standards, there's obviously deterioration that is possible on some of these species. Are you able to notice between the illustration from the early 19th century and the photographs from the 2023, are you able to see where a species has, or where the type specimen has begun to deteriorate?
Yeah, well, the deterioration is unavoidable. The older specimens are very fragile at the moment.
Yep.
We have to take into account that most of them are probably 250 years old now, because the early ones were described in 1770. So it means that they were already in London, and they come from Sierra Leone or from India or from Mosquito Coast in Central America. Yeah. And they were probably collected a few years before that, or at least 1 year.
Yeah, yeah. But they predate European settlement here in the colony of New South Wales. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That is impressive. And they are very fragile. The color have faded a little bit in some cases, because the color of the wings of a butterfly, they can be pigments, but sometimes they are structural. I mean, it's just the reflection of the light. I don't know whether you have seen the bright blue big butterflies, the morpho ones.
Yes, I have. Yes.
Very popular in exhibitions. These ones, they have a structural color. They don't fade.
Yeah, right.
But some colors get really, like red gets a little bit like brick color, reddish brown, and black can get brown. So it the color fades, but in general, you see the pattern keeps the pattern perfectly. Mm.
Can I just take you back to Drew Drury for a moment? Well, firstly, what was his background? But kind of two questions. One is, as you mentioned, he was the first to have illustrations and indeed had the financial resources to do so. But what drove him to actually record them when Carl Linnaeus himself is saying, we don't need to?
Well, the problem is he was the first one in this group, and probably the first one in together with Moses Harris in Britain. But there was a guy in the Netherlands who was already in that time starting to produce books on butterflies a little bit later than Drury.
Yes,
right. Illustrated. And I have read a letter by Drury complaining about the bad quality of the plates of the of a Dutch entomologist. But because Drury was very, very careful about the production of his plates, but he has several qualities of plates. That's another thing that we discovered.
Right.
Because there were different prices for the books. The books were probably very expensive.
Yes, yes, yes.
And he has like prime quality.
Yes.
And not such a good quality and a lower quality. Three different qualities, different prices.
That's extraordinary.
Because they were produced by lithograph process and then hand colored.
Yes.
By an artist. Yes, chromolithography was invented in the 1840s, I think 1840 or 1839. Yeah. So it was very early on, 70 years before that. So they were hand-painted. The books were probably very expensive. He produced three volumes.
Yes.
And not only of butterflies, they include all sorts of insects. So Maclay bought all the insects.
Yes.
Or most of the insects from Drury collection.
Yes.
And there is more work to do in the collection with the moths and with many insects that are illustrated. And in the case of Fabricius, he never produced a single illustrated book, but he referred in his last scientific paper on butterflies in 1793, he referred many of his descriptions to the Jones illustrations. And then it's a perfect cross-reference. And you go to see the watercolor of Jones, and then they have the name of the person who owned the butterfly, in which collection it was. It is written on top of the right top of a page.
Yeah.
And on the left side, it says the who mentions that, in this case, Fabricius or whatever, and which page it is published in that it's a cross reference. Yeah, very early. So they were all friends.
Yeah,
they were all friends. They were working together. They knew that someone would work this out in the future.
Yeah. So, I mean, you talked before about that sort of wide distribution of where the collection's coming from India, from Sri Lanka, from Central, from South America too, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I can tell you one example I was recalling last night. There is one butterfly there described in 1770 that from the Malvinas Island.
Ah, yes.
And it's endemic from the Malvinas Island.
Yes.
It's only found there, not anywhere else. And I found a specimen here.
Wow.
And it's a Falkland Islands. The
yes.
British, they call them Falkland Islands.
Yeah.
And there is material from, probably some material is also exchanged with other collectors. And the Drury used to pay collectors in Africa and in the Caribbean. He produced a pamphlet, what is called a broadside. It's a big piece of paper with the instructions.
So,
how to collect butterfly. It was printed.
Yes, yeah.
And he gave this to people who were going to travel overseas.
Yes.
The piece of paper and the materials to collect, the net and everything.
Yeah.
And then he paid like a salary.
So almost like an agent to go and collect.
Yeah. He did that individually and he got a lot of butterflies in that way. But Maclay had a different view. He just bought the collection after that. So,
I mean, did Drury travel himself anywhere, or did he?
Probably not. Probably
so
not.
He remained in Britain.
But he got samples from several places of Africa, especially the area of Sierra Leone, in tropical Africa. Indonesia.
Yep.
Australia was already discovered. The first person who collected butterflies in Australia was probably Sir Joseph Banks, who was the naturalist of James Cook's first voyage. And there are some butterflies from Banks' collection, which is in London, that were probably exchanged with these people because there are some specimens here. There is something more interesting, even more interesting, because there was one of a very well-known naturalist in the early times in Australia.
Yeah.
It's a person called John Lewin, who was also a very good artist, painter of the fauna of Australia. And he came to Sydney, paid by Drury.
Oh,
I found
right.
out that. And he was collecting butterflies for Drury.
Yes.
But he came here in the year 1799. Right. 1799, and Drury died in 1803.
Yes.
So he got, for 4 years, he probably got a little bit of samples from Lewin. And these samples were not studied by Drury because he died. He was already ill.
Yeah.
And the collection was auctioned 2 years later.
Yeah.
And there was a guy from Ireland called Edward Donovan who apparently bought part of the collection.
Yes.
Drury. But then it went to the hands of Maclay. And Donovan described a number of butterflies from Australia from his collection and from Maclay's collection. Mm. He mentioned that they belonged to Mr. Maclay collection in 1805. It was all very quick.
Yes.
And I said during the last weeks, I will check whether these types are here. And they are here.
Yeah, okay.
So they are here as well, the Donovan ones.
So there's that kind of really interesting path where you've got Drury's agents working in various places around the globe, sending them back to London. Drury's publishing them with the illustrations. They're then being scattered, and you've got Alexander Maclay re-amassing Drury collection
and
from
then
a
bringing them
sources,
to Australia.
And then bringing them to Australia.
And this sample from John Lewin went to London, got described and came back to Australia, and they are here.
Wow.
So this is incredible.
That is really incredible. Yeah. It's a remarkable piece of detective work, really.
It's like forensic science.
Yeah.
It's very good to resolve a crime. If we had a crime, a butterfly involved in a criminal case.
Did Drury have any from Venezuela?
There are butterflies from Venezuela here. They came later to the hands of Maclay. And I didn't know why, because I can tell you, I know very well the fauna of my country and also the history of the entomology of Venezuela. And there are very few collectors during the independence war.
Yes.
Because it was very difficult.
Well, I was going to say that a lot of the collections must have followed along national and imperial lines, so that, you know, an English collector is obviously going to have greater access to areas under British domination, but somewhere that's Spanish or recently independent is probably not so easy.
You know, when America, Spanish America, was dominated by the Spanish completely in before the beginning of the 19th century, all the ports, Spanish ports, were closed for other merchants from the Netherlands, the British,
the French.
So that initiated the buccaneers,
the pirates, yes,
because they just assaulted all other boats coming from the ports, Spanish fleets,
yes, including gold.
Yeah, exactly. Everything. So that's the origin of the famous Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes.
So, but they had some ports that they could go, like in. In northeastern Brazil, there was a Dutch Brazil. There was a Dutch colony. So most of the butterflies from Brazil come from the 18th century in this collection. They come from this area of Brazil.
Right.
And you can see, because they represent the subspecies of northeastern and southeastern Brazil.
Yes.
And some of them come from Jamaica, which was
British.
British colony. And some of them came from the coast of Panama, which they managed to get to. They call it the Mosquito Shore.
Mm, mm.
Like a mosquito coast. But everyone believes that there are many mosquitoes there. But that's the name of an aboriginal group of people. Mosquitoes, that's the original name.
Oh, right.
Mosquitoes. So it sounds like there are many mosquitoes there.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So they and sample from North America. That's another important thing, because many types of North American butterflies are here.
Mm.
The North American Lepidopteris, who are many.
Yeah.
They don't know where their types are, and they will know very soon that they are here. And then we have samples from Venezuela that came later on, maybe at the end of the 1820s.
Okay. And could they be associated with William Sharp McClay being in Cuba, do you think?
Probably, but we figured out already who was the collector, because we found labels.
Oh, excellent.
With the T. Dot Peel. That is Titian Peel, a North American collector who went to Colombia in 1821 and Venezuela.
Right.
So that was a very, very difficult time, because it was in the middle of Independence War.
Mm, mm.
But he somehow McClay got the butterflies from Titian Peel.
It's extraordinary, the scale of the trade, isn't it?
Yeah.
During your research, have you had a particular favorite? You know, is there one that sticks in your memory?
Well, one brown one.
One brown one.
There's a case of a brown butterfly that everyone has been trying to find, because the illustration is in the collection of John's watercolor. It's a very dull butterfly, completely brown upper side and the underside with very little design.
Yeah.
And some people have searched for that. Some people had identified as a different taxon. The type is not here. I mean, it was already searched for by Jude Field, to help another researcher.
Mm.
And she concluded that the type was not here. I revised it very well, the collection, and the type is not here. But there are two specimens, one male and one female. They are not the type, because they don't represent the animal illustrated, but there are two. And nobody knows what this butterfly is.
Mm.
I think I have worked out which genus it belongs to.
Yes.
But it hasn't been collected again since the 18th century.
Right.
So I suspect it comes from some place near India, because some other species of this genus come from this area, maybe from an island, small island, I don't know. So this is a fascinating case. I think I have information to probably produce a single paper about this butterfly.
Mm.
It's not a very exciting animal from the beauty point of view, because it hasn't got bright, brilliant color.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But it's a very interesting
mystery.
Okay. Yes, a mystery.
Mystery.
Yeah. There are some other butterflies in the collection, day flying moths, that are supposed to be extinct. There are three examples of this beautiful day flying moth from Jamaica called Urania sloanus, which is extinct. I mean, nobody can find it anymore.
Mm.
And there are three specimens from the 18th century in McClay's collection.
Okay.
Yeah, someone got them in Jamaica for him.
Yeah, fascinating. You're listening to Object Matters. My guest for this episode is Angel Villoria. Angel, so when you return home, what's sort of the next step in the process? You talked about how you're going to be writing a number of publications, but at this point in time, what's your key focus for?
To continue this work, we already have all the information of what is here. We're going to have the photograph done. That will take a while because we're talking about maybe 750 photographs.
Yeah.
Because there are at least three photographs per specimen.
Yeah.
And they have to be also scaled and edited, each one. So that's going to take a few months. And in that period of time will give me time to do my work of researching each case. Mm. Because now we are going to deal with the names.
Yeah.
Some of these names may be or not available for taxonomy.
Yes.
Because there are cases of synonymy where two different species were described with the same name.
Yes, yeah.
And it has to be resolved using the International Code of Zoological Nomenclature. And there are cases of homonymy, which means that the same name
has been prescribed to two different species.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So this is all very complicated. Mm. And there are cases of homonyms and synonyms at the same time. And there are cases of double types. For instance, we have types here. It's the same animal was examined by Fabricius and Drury. And they both, even they were friends.
Yes, yeah.
But they were working
Independently.
Independently in different countries. Fabricius was Danish, and he visited London several times, but he was working in Denmark. So they describe the same animal with two different names, so there is a synonym involved with a difference of time, so their priority goes to the first one.
Yep.
And they use the same specimen
right. To
describe it. So the type, it will bear two labels, with two different type labels.
Yes.
With two different names.
Yes.
So that all of this historical detail had to be worked out, all the explanations of why I decided that this is a type because it has a difference from the painting.
Mm.
Some of them have differences.
Mm.
But I made the decision, this is a type.
Yeah.
So I have to explain why. It's just because it got the pin, it was reset.
Yeah.
We have found specimens that have been reset or the pin replaced. You can see there are two holes in the body.
Yes.
And all sorts of things. I mean, it's just a variety of cases that have to be dealt with individually.
Fascinating. For visitors to the museum, I imagine none of these type specimens are currently, none of the 284 are currently on display, but we have so many other aspects of the natural history collection currently on display. What would you like visitors to the museum to think about when they're looking at those specimens, and particularly those that were collected back in the 18th and early 19th century that have this really long history of the collection? What can we learn from them?
I think that this is a case to organize an exhibition, I think. But I understand and I recommend not to use the specimens for exhibition because they are in a very fragile condition. But the photograph can be used for that. And it can be a very fascinating kind of history to show in a chronological way.
Are the specimens at all suitable for 3D scanning?
They can be scanned, yeah.
Other option is an exhibition of prints of some sort.
They can be scanned, and it's a very good subject for an exhibition because it can be presented in a chronological way, like telling the story of all these marvelous, the routes that the butterflies. I mean, there are butterflies coming from every part of the world. They went to London, they dispersed, they were again put together and then brought bound down to Australia.
It's an amazing story.
In a very dangerous trip, probably.
Yes.
And it's like a miracle, you see?
Yeah.
They were safe.
Yeah.
By Maclay. I think I'm going to visit Maclay's grave tomorrow and bring some flowers to the guy because he did a major set of rescue labor for science.
Well, thank you for spending time exploring
that
collection.
Invitation,
It's been amazing. It's been, on a personal level, lovely having you in the office over the last 3 months. It's been great, and I look forward to seeing your results. Thank you for joining us on Object Matters.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
Object Matters is recorded on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. The Chow Chak Wing Museum wishes to pay our respects to the traditional custodians of these lands and wishes to acknowledge the ongoing care for the country by Gadigal people.
Subscribe to Object Matters on your favourite podcast app and connect with the Chow Chak Wing Museum on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. You can also subscribe to our monthly e-newsletter, News Extra, via our website, sydney.edu.au/museum.